Father Austin Fleming of Our Lady Help of Christians Church is being interviewed by Renee Garlick for Concord's Oral History Program for a project on the faith community on February 6, 2001. The interview is taking place at the rectory at 1404 Main Street. Sunday masses are overflowing. The church itself promotes intimacy. You have very outreach, a warm personality, and so there's clearly a connection with the flock. Mm-hmm. Will you describe Our Lady's Parish?
I've been here for 7 years, and the first homily or sermon I preached, I said to the folks here at Our Lady's that the assigning of a Catholic pastor is the closest thing we have in American culture to an arranged marriage. That a third party says, you and you are going to spend a good deal of time together. We expect you to work together, to grow together, to love each other. So I told them, I said, you know, this is the beginning of this arranged marriage, and you don't know who I am, I don't know who you are yet, but we're going to find out pretty quickly, and we need to pray that we're going to be able to work together to make it work. Like all marriages, they don't just romantically happen, it's the product of work together. And 7 years into our arranged marriage, I think things are really very fine. Just this past Sunday, in my homily, I said to the folks, my topic was, where do we find our security? And I told them that my greatest security is in the relationship I have with them, with God. They are my family, my friends, my home, my work, my community, my parish, my joy, my job. They are everything for me. We only share that because we all happen to believe in God. I doubt that I would be able to afford to live in Concord if this parish didn't provide me a beautiful home on Main Street. So it's our faith that has brought us together. I think it's my ability, willingness, desire to communicate on that level that has ignited this relationship between the pastor and the people. I think folks want preachers to preach the scriptures, but through their own experience. They want to hear that not only that I believe this too, but here's how it's working in my life. And that makes it very real for folks. And that means you have to get up on Sunday mornings and sort of reveal yourself, bare your soul in front of folks. That's a daunting thing, but at the same time, the fruits of that are so immediate and so palpable that it just helps me each Sunday to be able to do that more and more. I don't want to give the impression that I get up and preach myself. I don't. My task is to preach the scriptures. But my homily is breaking open the scriptures so that we can understand it in the terms of today's life. That's what we're trying to do. Now, lest it sound like I'm the mastermind here, in this arranged marriage, I was fortunate enough to be assigned to an incredibly warm, inviting, generous community. Which is, they're not all those things because I'm here. The first Sunday I was here, I could just feel the warmth in this parish. Folks who have been, you meet people after Mass coming out of the church, and they'll say, you're visiting from New Jersey or something. And the two things that visitors comment immediately, almost without exception, are, music was beautiful, and I could tell that this is a community. These people are together. And that has something to do with West Concord, apart from anything Catholic or Presbyterian or Episcopalian or Congregational. That has something to do with this part of town, this town, this town's history, how these folks happen to come here, where they come from. And as I say, that I didn't put all that together. That was all here when it came.
And what do you know about the background? How would you characterize the people of your parish?
People of my parish, we're a young parish. We only have 12 to 15 funerals a year. And in a parish of about 1,000 households, that's a small number of funerals. So we're a young community. It's not that we don't have senior citizens with us, but I guess they're very healthy, they don't die. young community, we have a combination of folks who were born in West Concord, grew up in West Concord, married somebody down the street in West Concord and still live in West Concord. And we have folks who have been here anywhere from 2 months to 15, 20 years. We have a lot of young, upwardly mobile families. We are a parish, as I tell folks, we raised, we're built, putting up a new building behind a church for office and meeting space. And our building fund goal was $1.2 million. But within about 5 months, we raised $1.6 million.
Wow.
And the folks here are very generous that way. I wish I could get 10 hours from people as easy as I can get $10,000. And that's a way of getting at the life of the people in my parish. It's extremely busy. Young families with young children who play three sports and are in two league clubs and one drama club and take ballet lessons and horse riding. A faith community competes for a family's time, and unfortunately, you don't put "I went to church on Sunday" on your high school resume when you're applying to colleges. So we often lose in the competition. Time is, I think, time is the most valuable commodity in this community.
Our Lady's Congregation Church was built at the earlier part of the century.
Mm-hmm. 1903 is when Mass started. The building was, the cornerstone was laid in 1903. And the parish was, the church was, the parish was established as a community, faith community separate from St. Bernard's and Concord Center in 1907. So in 2007 we'll be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the founding of the parish, although the cornerstone is 1903 because the building preceded the establishment of the parish. So we began as a mission of St. Bernard Parish. It was at a time when the population in West Concord was evolving from primarily Yankee, to a lot of immigrants and children of immigrants settling here, working in the mills, finally that required the presence of another parish faith community to be established. There's, when I first came to West Concord 7 years ago, people were quick to tell me about the difference between Concord and West Concord. I think in the past that was a fairly marked difference, at least in people's understanding. There are folks in my parish today who say, well, I went into Concord yesterday. And that always says, well, where did you go? I mean, we're in Concord. I always, well, no, we're in West Concord. I went into Concord on the other side of Route 2. So there's, in a lot of folks, there's that historic mentality. But I think folks on either side of Route 2 at this point no longer refer to West Concord as the junction. You know, we're more than a train stop. And it has become a vibrant community. The shopping area, not quite as boutique-y as Concord Center, but a lot of lovely stores in West Concord that people come to. I think that there's a, if you will, a kind of West Concord pride.
Sure,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not in competition with Concord mm-hmm. Center, you know, but people are happy and proud to be from West Concord.
It's an identity.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hot real estate market, tell you that. Absolutely.
So it's interesting that it began as a mission mm-hmm. of St. Bernard's.
We, at St. Joseph's Parish in Lincoln was also a mission of St. Bernard's. Father Paul O'Brien, who used to be stationed at St. Bernard's, used to always remind me that St. Bernard's was the mother church and we were but a daughter of his.
What's your relationship with St. Bernard's now?
With St. Bernard's now? A good working relationship with Father Murray, who's the pastor there. The Archdiocese of Boston is encouraging, in a programmatic fashion, is encouraging parishes to work together. In the last 3 years, St. Bernard's and Our Ladies have combined their high school confirmation programs. We have combined our youth ministry programs. We have hired jointly a youth minister for the two parishes. Our two directors of religious education work together pretty closely. And I think, especially in the areas of youth and religious education, we will see even more joint programming between the two parishes. Particularly at the high school level, the parish distinction in Concord is a sort of false one in terms of Concord life. For instance, most of the kids in town go to Concord Carlisle High School. So for us to have two confirmation programs, two youth ministry programs, it just doesn't make any sense. So it's a win-win parishes. I think probably in people's minds that St. Bernard's, that the historical reality plays itself out, that St. Bernard's would be perceived as the senior or older parish. I don't mean senior citizens, maybe a large young community too, but that the style of life and worship, I think, is different in two communities. Not to say that one is better than the other, they're just different. As it would be different in St. Joseph's in Lincoln and St. Michael's in Bedford.
How is the style different?
The style. Let's see. Nothing affects the style of Sunday worship more significantly than the attitude and the style and the personality of the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I preside over prayer here. Mm-hmm. I preach at prayer here. I work with musicians with music. It's going to filter through me in one way, through Father Murray in another
mm-hmm.
way. Father Murray is... he's a little more reserved than I am. We had something with the children at the 9:30 Mass this past Sunday. I had about 20 second graders in the sanctuary, and I was trying to get them lined up in some orderly fashion as quickly as possible. I literally tripped over myself and fell down in front of the whole congregation and bounced right back up. the response of the folks was good. Everybody laughed. And I think it's because I was laughing. I made a stupid little bumble there. And that's the kind of personality I have. And, you know, another pastor might fall down and people would rush up and say, "You're okay." I don't think it's that my people didn't care that I was okay. It's just it's the way it is here.
Yeah,
you
know? They could relate to the human aspect. Yeah. How free are people to cross over Route 2 and come to your parish?
There has been over 100 years a history of sort of a tide washing back and forth over mm-hmm. Route 2. And it's depending on the pastors, actually, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Different folks warm up to different pastors in different ways. So
it's okay. You can do that.
Well, I think today there's no problem with it. Mm-hmm. I think when I was growing up, I'm 54. I think my parents' generation would never think of crossing a parish line. But if you lived in that parish geographically, that's where you went to church. But this is interesting that more and more, like on a monthly, if not weekly basis, I'm meeting new families in my parish who moved to Concord within the last, say, 3 to 4 months. Prior to their move here, they got on the internet and they started looking for parish web pages.
Mm-hmm.
And they visited, they went from parish to parish to see where they were going to buy a house in West Concord or in Acton or in Maynard or Stowe. But they were going to choose their parish. So I'm very fortunate that we have a wonderful webmaster who has done a wonderful web page for us. And so people are looking around. Just the way they look for it, you know, the thing that young couples do in buying a house is to look at the school system. And that happens with the faith communities too. Which is why it shows a real seriousness about this. The role of faith in their lives and how much they want that component of their life to be vital for them. So it's exciting.
It's a beautiful, beautiful religion. There's a timeless quality about it, but there is evolution.
Oh,
even
God,
in the liturgy, more involvement of lay people. You want to comment on that?
I was ordained in 1973. The Second Vatican Council happened while I was in high school in the mid-60s. So at the time that I was in seminary preparing to be a priest, was a time of incredible ferment and change. But even then, we had no idea of what it was going to look like 25, now almost 30 years down the road from then. So much change has happened. You know, I grew up in a parish that had 4 priests assigned to the parish. There used to be 3 priests at this parish in West Concord, and now I'm here by myself. And a day will come, I would say within 15 years, when there will be 1 priest in Concord to serve both parishes. That is an incredible change. Now, something that comes with that is that not only did the Vatican Council encourage greater participation by lay people, it's now a sine qua non. I mean, I just can't do it all by myself. So even if we were encouraging it, it would have to come that way anyway. So
less people going into the priesthood.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There was a time when if you wanted to enter a service profession, you became a priest or a minister, a doctor or a nurse or a teacher. But now, the opportunities to make a career in service of people are just myriad. And most of them don't require celibacy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them, except, I think, the Roman Catholic priesthood, invite women to be part of it. So, yeah, that we are the the little door that you have to get through to become a Catholic priest gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
So the dependence on the lay community
the bright side of this coin is that the shortage of clergy in the Catholic Church has helped lift up the lay people to where they ought to be. And to where they have been in many Protestant traditions for centuries. So that's the good side of that. I'm assigned here for 2 6-year terms. So I'm just finishing the first year of my second term, which means I have 5 years to go. Actually, I'm hoping that since 2007, the year after I leave, is the 100th anniversary year, I'm not going to let me stay for that.
So I hope they might squeeze
another year out of this, I'm not sure yet. But my agenda for the next 5 years is to try to ready this parish both for my successor, whoever he might be, and for the day when I wouldn't be surprised if my successor doesn't have a successor. That I'm confident that I'll be replaced, but I think that when his term runs out, that might be the time when this one priest can come into both parishes. So that means the lay community here has to take much more in-depth, serious ownership of parish life. And we're on the way to that. Not an easy thing to do in a church that has a history of clergy ownership of things.
Yeah.
It's not in our past, it's not what we grew up with. Go again.
people love the church, but not everybody finds it easy to be a practicing Catholic in all ramifications.
There's so many, I feel blessed to have been born in 1947 because because of that, I've had the opportunity to live in two different Catholic churches, the one before the council and the one afterwards. So I remember a time when I was growing up when we knew what the church taught. We believed that. It was a sin to question it, so nobody did. And now, not only in the church, but we've seen the bumper sticker, question authority. Just be suspicious of authority. In general, question them. So that's an attitude that's abroad in society and in our culture, and it goes into the church too. So now we are in a period where everything is questioned, and that's a good thing, that's a healthy thing, because blind acceptance of things we didn't really understand, that's not adult. You wouldn't want people to have that attitude going to politics in this country, to go into a voting booth with not really knowing what's going on. So the questioning is good, and it has, the kinds of questions that Vatican II asked in the 60s were the seed questions, if you will, the goddess questioning. So we live in a time of ferment when some people buy that, but they don't buy this, and they're not sure about that, but they are sure about this. Two weeks ago, welcomed four adults who are candidates for becoming Roman Catholic, and we have three more we're going to welcome in a couple weeks. And one of their first questions always is, do I have to believe everything the church says? And of course, there's a hierarchy of truths in Catholicism. And some things are much more important than others. The creed that we recite on Sunday is the core belief system of our church. Whether you think priests should be married or not, that's a debatable point. Apostles of Jesus who were married. Peter was considered to be the first pope, and he was married. So we have a history of married clergy, although we don't presently have that kind of opportunity. But I think there's also a point where Catholic folks have to look at what the church teaches and say, at the heart of things, am I with the church? There are some folks who sort of want to keep the membership card in their pocket, but dismiss everything the church says. Well, if anybody has any right they want to disagree with what the church teaches, I happen to disagree with some political parties, and so I don't vote for them. I don't register under their name with the town, and I wouldn't. It's part of the times, and I'm not put off or frightened by it. I think it's healthy, and we'll survive this too.
It's the Church of Salvation.
Mm-hmm. The Church of Salvation. That is true, and that is tough to preach in a society like ours, in an economy like ours, in a community like ours, where we are in need of so little, and where virtually all of us have more than we need of stuff and things, including myself. We have a parish outreach to a community in Haiti, we send a group of about 10 to 15 people down each January for 10 days. People of Haiti have nothing. They barely have homes. Haiti is the third hungriest country in the world. But they have happiness. Suicide is virtually unknown in Haiti. All they have is God. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is, we need to alleviate the human needs there, and that's part of why we have the outreach, you know. But there's a lesson for us there. That the more we fill ourselves up with stuff, the less we even think about a need for being saved from something. And it's tough to preach in a community where almost everybody has almost anything they want. I want to walk that line between preaching that sends people out, turns them off, sends them away because it's too harsh. I need to be challenging in a way that engages people, not that. Part of that is my own week by week acknowledgement of my preaching, of the fact that I am one of those people who have too much. And I've got to look at that in my own. But I think related to the salvation question is, why are people coming to church in Wisconsin? And something I hear from folks over and over again, words like this, when I walk into church on Sunday morning, I feel like I'm home. It's a haven. I feel safe. I don't hear this, and I try to listen to this carefully. I don't hear this as sort of retreat from the real world or something like that, but that folks are finding something in faith community together that they know they don't get anyplace else. And when a community, a parish, is able to provide the time, the place, the service, the opportunity for people to engage at a substantive level, it feeds something in the soul. And once you get fed there, you realize that this is one of the few places where you can get fed like this. And if you develop a taste and a hunger for that, then you want to come back. And I think that's salvation.
Yeah.
That is being in touch with my need for God and for my need for other people who share it and are able to say, I need that too.
Certainly among the clergy and the intellectual thinkers in the church, there is a lot of probing, questioning, disagreement. It is a time of evolvement.
It is, and it's amazing to me. I get amazed on both sides here. Sometimes I'm amazed at what the average person in the pew on Sunday does know about what's going on in theological circles in the church. And then there are other times when I'm amazed that, wow, you haven't heard about that? But by and large, the typical person who worships in our church on Sunday morning in this parish, the typical person is not torn by the issue of women's ordination. They may have a view on it. They probably have a view on it. And they're probably willing to express that view. But it's not a gut-wrenching issue for them. For some, it is. And there's a group of moms in the parish that I'm in a kind of, not like a structure, but it's an ongoing conversation with them about the question of how do they raise their sons and daughters in a church which, in so many ways, appears to exclude women. And I'm so grateful that they trust me to talk to them about this, because I'm part of the problem. I am that white, male, celibate, ordained guy in this community. I do have the position, the authority. I can get in the club. Their daughters can't. So I'm grateful that we have a relationship of trust with them. Down and talk about that. I'm also grateful that that they love the church so much that they want to stay with this, but there are these things in the way. There are other issues that Catholic folks have just settled on their own. So we're not going to talk about this, but we're going to talk about it. The issue of the church still stands opposed to artificial birth control. But most Catholic folks use artificial birth control and have simply made that decision in conscience. Church, the authoritative teaching church, needs to pay attention to that. Because that isn't some sort of willful disobedience or reckless disregard. We have to look at what the general population of our faith community is telling us there, and take the heart of the teaching about family and see how it applies there. And you know, so much of what you read in the papers about conflict in the church at the theological, hierarchical level, so much of that doesn't filter down into parish life. I don't for a moment suggest that it's unimportant, therefore. It's because Pope John the 23rd had theological questions about the church that the council happened, and so much wonderful growth has happened, so that's very important. But if folks are being fed spiritually on Sunday morning in their parish, That's really what they want from the church. And the other stuff slips out to the margins, I think.
Well, certainly if fewer priests are being ordained, far fewer women are becoming nuns, and that's what the education system had relied on for teaching, so that has produced a great change.
Oh, huge change, yeah. And it's produced a huge change at a time when, for instance, in the Archdiocese of Boston, Cardinal Law would love to have a Catholic school in every parish. But the cost of that is just incredible. And, you know, in a community like Concord, suppose I was a pastor who wanted an elementary school in our parish, a parochial school. Not only would is there cost involved there, but I'd need to compete with the quality of the Concord school system. And you know what that would mean. I'd need several millionaires to endow the school to even get near that. There was a parish school at St. Bridget's of Maynard. There was a boys' high school and a girls' high school in town. They have all closed. And they closed because of dwindling enrollment. Now, there are a lot of folks in town right now who wish those schools were back. But we can't afford that financially. And you know, as you mentioned, as there are fewer and fewer men going to priesthood, there are fewer and fewer women going into religious life as nuns and sisters. And they were, if you will, cheap labor. We staff whole schools with sisters whose monthly salary was $30. And in those days, they were happy with that and could live on that. Convent provided for their other needs, but they're gone. And the women who are in this life, by and large, aren't in teaching ministries now. They're much more in social action ministries. So that whole picture, that face on the church, that certainly I went to a regional Catholic high school. And about 80% of the faculty were sisters in ordination, and about 20% lay faculty. It just happens that last week I was invited back to celebrate Mass at Bishop Hamrick High School, where I graduated 35 years ago, something like that. And I think there are now maybe three sisters in the school, and I think two of them are retired, and they're not in teaching position. So that Catholic school is paying salaries for lay people. And as you may know, we pay awful salaries to lay people in Catholic schools, and it's hard to keep them because we can't afford to compete with local school systems.
That's certainly a big change in our time. The pastoral life of your parishioners is certainly very important. And in that sense, the issues of society become more the issues of your working in their pastoral life.
I think Concord, people in Concord tend to be across the board socially aware, conscious. And that's certainly true at the moment here. Our outreach to the poor and the needy, locally, nationally, and internationally, is I think wonderful. Always more room for more growth. We have probably our most active parish commission is our Social Action Justice Commission. They have, over the last 7 to 10 years, structured this incredible program of outreach. And structured ways for individual parishioners to be constantly contributing to that. I guess, you know, if that must always be there because of the nature of the gospel, nature of the church's mission, and to make sure that when folks come to the Haven on Sunday morning, that it not become a warm, fuzzy place to curl up and feel nice. That my preaching needs always to have that cutting edge on it that leads us to look outside ourselves. And that's another difficulty. We've got wealthy, powerful people, members of this parish, who run corporations, who make decisions that impact the lives of people around the world. And again, I want to be able to preach the gospel to them in a way that they really hear what Jesus is saying, but not in a way that says, "Oh, probably you're just not being realistic." You know, that it's so easy to dismiss a preacher that way. You don't know what the real world's like, but this is what I have to pay the people who work in Taiwan. To negotiate that road where you can stay in conversation.
The name of your church, Our Lady, the place of the Virgin Mary.
Oh, sure. The full title of our church is Our Lady, Help of Christians. Mary, in the Catholic faith, Mother of Jesus, has a variety of titles. So we have Our Lady of the Assumption, Our Lady of the Annunciation, Our Lady Help of the Poor, Our Lady Comfort of the Afflicted, Our Lady Help of Christians. And, you know, when I was growing up in the 50s and the early 60s, Marian devotion, prayers to Mary, the devotional life around Mary was a huge piece of parish life. Part of that is that in those days, all that stuff was in English, and Mass was in Latin. And historically, you know, we've seen that the rise of Catholic devotional life was often because it was something people understood. Now, our whole prayer life is in English. And so some of that devotional stuff has slipped into the background a little bit. But interestingly enough, some of the moms in that group that I'm in conversation with are very anxious and active about making sure that their sons and daughters know who Mary is in the life of the church. It is out of that ongoing conversation I had over 7 or 8 weeks through Advent season, preparing for Christmas and the Christmas season. Each week I had in the center aisle of church a different image of Mary. And it was funny, you know, it got to the point where people were coming anxious to see what we were going to see this week, you know. I know that we're doing a special program in April with our children, who Mary is in our life. And of course, the simple phrasing of that for Catholics is that Mary is the mother of Jesus. Jesus is our brother, and so she is, in a real way, our mother, too. So I'm, although it's a mouthful when you answer the phone, Our Lady, Help of Christians, easy to say St. Joseph's. I'm very, very pleased that that's the name of our parish. It's good for us.
The ecumenical outreach, the lay clergy.
Contra Clergy Lay Group, right,
yeah.
I've been part of that now for 7 years. And, wow, that's a tough one. clinical life in Concord, I think, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being really great, I would give it, I guess, 6 or 7. And the reason that I give it a kind of a low score is that each of the individual faith communities in Concord is so vital and active and busy that I think it's difficult for us to pursue something we want to pursue. Just as I complained a few minutes ago about being able to get money for my parishioners, but getting their time is a much harder task. Try to get the leaders of the faith community to give you their time for meeting in this town. And it's tough, not because they don't want to, but because they're so maxed out in their schedules otherwise. We have the annual Thanksgiving Eve prayer service, which is a wonderful thing. There's a new pastor at West Country Union Church right across the street from us, and he and I are working consciously together to try to develop a better relationship between our two communities. We're very fortunate that we already have a bridge with both churches, West Country Union and Our Lady, share the same music director. And our schedules are such that on Sunday morning he can walk across the street back and forth to do both communities.
The name of the new pastor?
The name of the new pastor is John Hudson at West Country Union. He came last fall replacing Jim Keck. And John is a fireball. As much as I loved working with Jim Keck, I think this is going to even be more productive for us. So ecumenical life, unity of Christians to be one of the highest agenda items for us. Sometimes the Catholic Church is a great help in that direction, and sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot. So it's a hard road to travel with folks, but it's got to be higher on our priority list. It's not easy for Father Murray at St. Bernard's and I at Our Lady's to get Catholics to cross the Catholic parish lines. We try to have joint penance services before Christmas and Easter for confession. And so maybe we tried having it one year at St. Bernard's and one year at Our Lady's. And so, we have to go to St. Bernard's for that? Well, it's only down the street, folks. And that's a Catholic church. So it's not easy to move folks out of the places they're in. I think we have a long way to go in helping folks in different faith communities to understand what those other faith communities are, who they are, what they do, what do they believe, how do they pray on their Sabbath. The groundwork is there, it's done, but we have a long way to go. I have a long way to go. I'm not just saying the other guys do it. I'm definitely part of the pack there. A lot of them.
So what you're saying basically is you don't get together that often.
Well, there is a monthly meeting.
Yeah, okay.
It's the Concord Clergy Lay Group, so there are clergy and lay representatives from each faith community. But I tell you, at the monthly breakfast meeting, the majority of folks who show up are the lay folks. They are more faithful than the clergy. And they also outnumber us. And I'm not talking about raw numbers, but generally speaking, they're more faithful to this task than we are.
You talked about unity of mind, Christians being advocated, but of course Concord has a synagogue, and I know you have contact with Michael Luckins. I had just recently heard James Carroll's, who wrote about Constantine's sword, and the relationship between Judaism and Christianity, maybe even anti-Semitism. Do you want to come?
Sure. I haven't read James Carroll's book yet. I want to. Have you read it?
No.
God, it's massive.
It is massive. That's why I heard him first.
Might be my summer project. I'm happy to have the relationship that I do with Michael Luckins. I think we feel very comfortable with each other and respect each other. We don't do enough together. And we should do more together. In my own community, the issue of Jewish-Christian relationship was more than strained. The evidence of persistent anti-Semitism in our culture, in the Roman Catholic Church, in people's minds, in what folks heard in their families when they were growing up, there's so much of it still there. So I make an effort. I don't even know if Michael knows I do this, so I should let him know that I do this. Every Sunday we have prayers of the faithful. It's a list of things and people we pray for. So I watch the Jewish calendar fairly faithfully, and always try to include in our prayers of the faithful for our Jewish neighbors who are celebrating Passover, who are celebrating Hanukkah, who are celebrating Rosh Hashanah, just to keep them in our prayer, and for my people to know that they're our brothers and sisters, and they're celebrating their days right now. This is one of those years when Passover and Easter are going to be right next to each other, which I love when that happens, because our Christian liturgy is so deeply embedded in Jewish history and rite and prayer. There are too many ways in which Catholics are ignorant of that, or I think some of them just don't believe it. So that's so important. The Archdiocese is making a concerted effort right now to make sure that there's a programmed element in the religious education of Catholic children to help them better understand our relationship with Jewish people. I haven't read Carol's book, but I've seen him interviewed on TV a couple of times on PBS about the book, and it's only in the early 1960s at the Council that we really stood up as the Roman Catholic Church to say some powerful corrective things about our relationship with the people of Israel. And it is, at least as Carol is saying in conversation, not in print, I'm sure he's saying it in print too, that's a scandal that 1960 years after the death of Jesus, we're finally getting the right scoop on this. So we have a long, long way to go. Concord is an educated community, and I think that there's a way that education helps us to understand. So although there have been some awful incidences of anti-Semitic behavior and graffiti and that sort of thing. Just the 7 years that I've been here, I think generally there's a good relationship between Christians and Jews in the town. I know we always feel welcome at Kibbutz Shalom, and I better not mention his name because this is going into a public record here, but there's a gentleman from Kibbutz Shalom, not Michael Lucas, not the rabbi, but a gentleman there who's very involved in the life of Kibbutz Shalom, and almost every year he brings his children to Christmas Midnight Mass.
Larry Fry.
Oh, you can say that out loud, okay. All right. And that is...
He's a big fan of yours.
And he was here this past Midnight Mass at Christmas, and as the procession was coming into the church, I walked by him, and I just choked up to see him there. That and he comes because he wants his family to know what we're doing on Christmas Eve. That is, you know, that's where it really happens. And in some ways, that's much more important than Michael Luckins and I sitting down having a dialogue. That's good too. But it's neighbor to neighbor, and Larry's knowing that he's free to come here at Christmas Eve, that he knows he'll be welcome.
That's really
good. I just love that.
You have a Catholic television program, or?
Oh, that might be overblowing it just a little bit. The Archdiocese has its own television station, Boston Catholic TV. And over the last, since I've been here, so over the last 7 years, I have done two series for BCTV, actually three. The first one was a 13-week series on engagement and marriage and weddings in the Catholic community. Then we taped here a series of evening prayer services for Advent and Christmas season. Now that was five years ago, I guess. And it's rerunnable material, so it still plays every Advent and Christmas season. And then 2 years ago, I did a 13-week series called Open Wide the Doors, where it was kind of a little interview show where each week I interviewed folks from different archdiocesan offices, agencies, and ministries, help people understand all the kinds of ways that the archdiocese reaches out to people in addition to parish life, which folks know. They want me to do a series on worship, which I want to do, and as soon as I have time to do it, I'm going to do that too. I also, once a year, celebrate the Sunday morning Mass that is televised, and then four or five times a year, I celebrate the daily Mass that is televised from the Cardinal's residence. I love doing that stuff. I wish I had more time. It's a time factor again.
Yeah.
13 half-hour shows. It takes a half hour to tape the show, but it takes a whole lot of hours to put that show together. And that's where the crunch is. It's not going to the studio to tape. It's getting ready to do the taping. So I want to do that. I'd like to do more of that.
That's wonderful outreach.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And it's amazing to me. Everywhere I go, somebody will say, oh, I saw you on TV. I saw your show. That and the website, maybe even the website even more, it's astonishing to me. How many people, we're very fortunate to have a parishioner who works on the website every week, so a lot of parish websites change about once a year. Ours changes at least once a week. All the new information from the parish bulletin is on every week. I write a letter in the bulletin every week. That's on the website. My Sunday homilies are on the website. Parish life and pictures. It's just wonderful to know that the message is getting out through the internet. Our parish, the joint youth group between the two parishes, has its own website, except they just did a new webpage. It's fantastic. And there are kids who will get online and look at the youth group webpage who will never open up the parish bulletin when their parents bring them home. It's just great stuff.
How do we access Our Lady's website?
Our Lady's website is www.olhc.org, and the parish youth group website, this is the new one, so it's www.concordteenfaith.com. Yep, that's what it is, concordteenfaith.com.
Now, music is an integral part of any service, and you have a especially beautiful voice.
Oh, thanks.
Will you sing certain aspects?
Sure. Can we talk about music first for a second?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Music is, should be, an integral part of Catholic worship everywhere. That's another instance where we don't have a long history of that. And so that's about the last 40 years that music in typical parish life has come alive. I am fortunate in that I have some musicality myself, so that comes easy to me, and I love it. I'm also blessed in Jim Barkovic, our music director, who is a superb musician and works so well with folks. We have two beautiful cantors whose voices just can't help but pray when they sing. Over the last 7 years, we have become a singing community, which I'm thrilled about. The best sign of this to me is that most Catholic parishes have an early Sunday morning Mass, and characteristically, there's no music at that first Mass. So over 7 years, we've gradually introduced music, and our 7:30 community on Sunday morning is one of our best singing Masses on our schedule, and I'm just so thrilled and proud of that. So I knew that you were going to ask me to do some singing, I realized just before you got here that my guitar's at church and the storm, things are not normal because of the storm we're in right now. What I'd like to do is to sing a text from the Mass that I don't do all the time. Sometimes do it around Christmas, but more often through the Easter season. And that is the Eucharistic prayer, which is the Roman Catholic Sunday Mass has two major parts, Liturgy of the Word, Liturgy of the Eucharist. Liturgy of the Word is scripture readings, some songs, and a homily or sermon. Liturgy of the Eucharist is preparing the altar, the Lord's table, with bread and wine, praying a prayer of thanksgiving, and the sharing of the Eucharist under the forms of bread and wine. The heart of that Liturgy of the Eucharist is the Eucharistic prayer, which is the Church's formal prayer of thanksgiving to God, in which we remember what Jesus did at the Last Supper on the night before he died. At different times of the year, I sing that, and I thought I might do that, because that text is the heart of our prayer as Catholics.
Are we ready to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess what the folks who are listening to us would want to imagine is that we are at Sunday Mass, and we listen to the scriptures. We have sung a psalm, sung an Alleluia verse, heard the homily, and prayed those prayers for the faithful. The collection has been taken up. Gifts of bread and wine have been presented and placed on the altar, and it is now time for this prayer of thanksgiving.
Father, you are holy indeed, and all creation rightly gives you praise. All life, all holiness comes from you, through your Son, Jesus Christ our Lord, by the working of the Holy Spirit. From age to age you gather a people to yourself, so that from east to west a perfect offering may be made to the glory of your name. And so, Father, we bring you these gifts. We ask you to make them holy by the power of your Spirit, that they may become the body and blood of your Son, our Lord Jesus Christ, at whose command we celebrate this Eucharist. On the night he was betrayed, he took bread and gave you thanks and praise. He broke the bread, gave it to his disciples, and said, "Take this, all of you, and eat it. This is my body, which will be given up for you." When supper was ended, he took the cup. Again he gave you thanks and praise, gave the cup to his disciples, and said, "Take this, all of you, and drink from it. This is the cup of my blood, the blood of the new and everlasting covenant. It will be shed for you and for all, so that sins may be forgiven. Do this in memory of me." Let us proclaim the mystery of faith. Christ has died. Christ is risen. Christ will come again.
Very beautiful.
Thank you.
Also, so glad that it's not in Latin. I can understand it. Latin has no longer.
Latin. Let's see. Well, if you went to Mass at the Vatican in Rome, you'd probably hear it in Latin. So it remains the international language of the official church. Documents that come out of Rome to the church at large around the world are written in Latin and then translated for different conferences of bishops around the world into their vernacular languages. I grew up in a church where Mass was in Latin. It was in high school in a council that we started to move from Latin gradually into English. I have never myself celebrated Mass in Latin. There's a small movement in the United States to return to Latin. I don't think it will gain a lot of adherence because it's you know, what we used to say was, well, no, we don't understand it, but any place you go in the world, it's going to be in the same language. Well, so that means anywhere I go in the world, I won't understand it. Understanding that is so important. And, if you might rent a movie with subtitles, or you might go to an opera, and there are those things about the stage there to help you understand. Those things are helpful, but I don't think we should have to come to church on Sunday and have a translation in my hand so that I can understand what's going on. I can't imagine that it was the Lord's intent for us to be having a translator to understand the scriptures all the time.
Well, I want to thank you. This was a spiritual experience.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.